said previously, I was in Netherlands for a couple of years before coming back to Australia. I live in Brisbane, currently work for HPE. And Rob Cowders is the guy I worked with. He's not here, unfortunately, so it is just me. Right, why this talk? So back in 2013, yeah, so Snowden released a whole bunch of information. Yeah, and obviously one of them was some revelation about about how they're supposed to allegedly hack Belbicom, which is a Belgian telco. And they're supposed to have hacked their GRX network. So if you have a look, if you remember back then, so at the end of 2013, it all came out, and by 2014, we're going, hang on, there's a lot of questions. I was going to tell people, we're going, hey, what's GRX? Why are they hacking? Why is Q interested in this GRX network? What can they do? What information is there? And yeah, why all this effort to hack it? So we thought, hey, we should talk about this because, yeah, there's a lot of questions. Not a lot of people know about this network. It's clearly quite an interesting piece of our network to have a look at. And you guys, so this is a Strat2 reveal from Snowden. Strat2 is the UK intelligence rating, so anyone familiar with that? A bit. So Strat1, Strat is top secret anyway. One is fairly top secret. Strat2 is really top secret. And Strat3 is so top secret that even Greenwald and Snowden didn't release any of that Strat3 level stuff. So it's pretty sensitive because it's geopolitically sensitive because it's a state hacking, it's a state level attack. So the assertion was that they went to hack the core GRX routers and specifically to do CNE, so computer network exploitation, pretty much means hacking. So that's what the American intelligence cyber defense call it, CNE. And so hack GRX routers to do a man in the middle, so basically listen to the GRX routers traffic. So this became the focus about discussion and talk. Okay, what is the information? As I said, what information can you get from it, and how easy is it to get to the GRX router? And now, what we'll go through is some what they did it and how to get it to it. Yeah, cool. Yeah, so what I'll do is we'll go through some GRX, some telco protocol stuff. Now, for you guys in the telco world, you'll know that the acronyms are a bit crazy, right? So, all the 3-4 letter acronyms is just insane. So, coming from basic security, pen testing, there's a lot of acronyms, but then when you hit the telco space, especially the LTE space, the radio, the transmission, it's just insane. So, I'm going to go through a whole bunch of background. I'll give you the minimum protocols and acronyms so that it all hangs together. So, this kind of makes sense. Right. Yeah, cool. Identifiers. So the GRX, just to go back, it's essentially the network that is used for your data. So if you're on 3G, 4G mobiles or on LTE, when you're roaming, that's the network that brings you back to your home country. Right? So the data gets piped back. And so it's not GSM, but it's just your data. So if you're doing mail, browsing, Facebook, all that. So any data is what this is what we're concerned about. Now, first of all, let's look at mobility, right? So you have a cell ID, so that's essentially the cell tower. So it's your base transceiver station. So it's towers you see all over the place. So that's cell ID. And then a few of them grouped together, we call it a routing error code. So that's part of that. Then when you go to a country level, so this slide is Netherlands, because we live from there. So Netherlands is the NCC, the mobile country code is 204. And then for each telco, there's an N network code, yeah, so NNC, which is unique to a telco. So in Australia, we have
505 as our country code, and then each telco, whether it's the Lycra Mobile, or in part of the defense, the other one, Singtel, Telstra, they have all different codes. So that uniquely identifies that where you are and what the location is.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So Vodafone, Telstra, some of the people we don't actually see as normal providers. Right, okay, more abbreviations. APN, access point name, right, so that identifies the location of Slack APN's record. IMSI, so IMSI is the subscriber identity, so that's a 15-digit, a decimal digit number that's unique to the user, right? So that's, so if you have a phone and you've got a SIM card, the IMSI is your number, it's relates to the phone number. So that's you. You've got UICC, which is the smart card, it has RAM, EEPROM, CPU, right? And within that you have a SIM application. So if in the UMTS and 3G, 4G world, that handles GSM and data as well. So in effect, it's a smart SIM card. And PDP context, so that's what gets initiated when you try and do a data connection, a data tunnel for your user data. Right? So we'll go through that a bit later. So what you see there is a globally recognized, agreed upon APN for, in this particular case, for a KPN. So if I was a KPN user roaming in Australia, and when I fire up my Google and when going through 4G, for example, that's what it will resolve with a DNS to get back to my home GSM. So we'll go through that. Right, high level, BTS, it's your base transceiver. Station, node B as well, that's the radio towers, and then you've got your home location register, which is a register that keeps information of who you are, user information, where you're from, your name, all sorts of information about the user, right? So that's a big lookup database. So, and the next one is SGSN, so it's really the serving GPRS support node. So that is the device that you talk to, then it helps you create the sessions to your home GGSN, which is the next one. That will be clear once I do some diagrams. So the important thing to do is to know is the BTS, the HLR, SGSN, which is where you are, the GGSN is your destination gateway, and of course DNS for resolving. So then the key things in this communication piece. Right. Okay, this should be better. So that's your handset, you talk to the radio towers, then you have a connection to the SGSN, that's cool. Then there's a lookup to HLR, who you are, get all the information, your plan, call plan, all that sort of stuff. Then it gets the global APN, like I said before, so it's like then there's a lookup on your DNS. And then it says, okay, you're on this address, IP address, then establishes to the GSN, then you get packet data out. So that's kind of very high level summary of how things work when you're doing data connection. Right, so in terms of protocol, UTP sits at the layer 4, right? So it's UDP, mostly UDP, and the transport level. So that's all the operator handles, and all your user data sits above there. Okay, so that's where it sits in the kind of OSI stack. Right, quick thing on UDP. So historically, when we were before even 2G, it's all GPRS on UDP 2386. These days, with version 1, we're using two different ports, 2123 and 2152.
223 UDP, that's the control plane, the signaling, and 2152 carries the user plane data. So the version 2 is mostly all on UDP 223. We'll see a bit more of that in the tick.
All right, what does it look like?
Primer, headers for GTP. The other one is GTP Prime, because GTP, in this context, normally uses three types. So you have GTPC, which is control plane for signaling, GTPU for your user data, and GTP Prime, which carries all your charging. So if you're roaming, and that GTP Prime sub-message carries all your charging so that the telcos can then cross-charge each other at the end of the month. Okay, so how much you use, and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, so in 8.15, you've got all the commands to create the PDD context, update, delete, etc. Tunnel endpoints, which allows the GTP tunnel to be created so that you can shove your data through. And this is what it looks like in Wireshark. So we go, that's the GTP type, our version. The transport PDU, so all the IP diagram for GTPU, which is your data, it sits under the TPU, so more acronyms again. And the endpoint, which are unique IDs to identify that GTP tunnel within IP. Okay, cool. Now, I mentioned PDP context, which is key in creating that tunnel. The information you need to do that is the APN, the IMSI, end user address, user location information, and the IMEI. Now, IMEI is the International Mobile Equipment ID identity, which uniquely identifies your handset. So I've got a Samsung 5G, whatever it is, and it has a unique IMEI, right? So that's specific to your type of handset, whether it's an Apple 6, 7, or whatever it is. We'll see a bit more on that in a tick. So just a quick diagram on that whole transaction. So you're now connected to the local SGSN. You do a query to DNS. It gets a response, obviously. It knows where the GSN is, the IP address. It creates that PDP context. It responds. It's all cool. So 2123, again, as I said, is the signaling plane. So all the communication, create session, delete session, and also move people from different SGSNs to update your session. So if you go from, as you're roaming, yeah, so it moves. Cool. TPD, as I mentioned, the user data on 2152. So remember that those two ports are quite important. Delete context when you finish that session. Back onto the control plane. So those are the key things in the GRX network. So because it's supposed to allow you roaming, right? So they're the key components, the key protocols that should be there. Right. Now, okay, in a roaming situation, say I've got a Dutch phone and I'm in the UK, so I'm on MCC 234, which is the UK, BT is on 076 network code. Oops, that's good. All right. But my home code is that 204.0.8. Right, so S7 is signaling for that purpose. Contacts gets the information. Resolves, like I showed before. Then it creates a tunnel to your home GGSN, and that's where the GRX comes in, right? So GRX links all the different telcos so they can talk to each other. So MNO stands for Mobile Network Operator, so you could be an Optus or Telstra or whatever. And if their subscriber is roaming, this is what they go through, the GRX network, so it's the GPRX roaming exchange. So when this was designed, it's specifically for this purpose. Now, there's the IPX network that's come up that is supposed to provide more service for video, for example, and not just
the data we have, but it's another discussion. So GRX essentially links all the global mobile providers, okay? And it's supposed to do backwards compatibility and all that good stuff around the world. So that's cool. There's only about 25 GRX providers in the world. Solicited and yeah, all over the world. So it's a restricted sort of club. But of course, a lot of these GRX providers also provide GRX services. So if you're a virtual mobile network operator or provider, you're a smaller, like a mobile is, I think, then you can subscribe to the bigger GRX and buy that service, peer with them, and you become part of the GRX. So you can then shove your user data across and allow roaming. Okay. In terms of the location, whole bunch in Europe, America, Telstra in Australia, some in Asia, and Europe, South America as well, we should do. Anyway. Right, let's quick look at Wireshark traffic. So this is GTP. These are the tunnel endpoints. So these are the IP addresses for the SGSN and GGSN endpoints, right? IP addresses. Then you've got the user endpoint. So the 10 address is your handheld IP address that is obtained. And then that destination address should be, it could be wherever you're going to. For example, if you're going to Google, you're going to Facebook. That, so as you can see, it's encapsulated in this way. And then within that, you've got the user plane traffic in there. Okay. So this is what it looks like. So when they talk about going into hacking a GRX router and doing man-in-the-middle to capture the traffic, and then they dump this traffic and put a Wireshark, like a TCP dump, for example, this is what you see. So this is what we did. We just went to a GRX router and did a Wireshark dump, TCP dump, and put the info. So this is what they're aiming to do. Now, if you load this into a network forensics tools, it does recognize GTP, but you don't see much information, right? There's a lot of, because it's all within that tunnel. So what they had to do to reveal the information is to remove the GTP header. So we wrote a little C program to basically remove all the tags and strip the headers and rewrite the frame. So basically clean that up and then reload that into your tool, and suddenly you're seeing all this information. So session information, images, your credentials, if it's clear text, for example, and so FTP, HTTP, so anything clear text you're gonna see. Now, apart from that, what else? So also within that GTP traffic, you've got location details and device details. So you've got the IMSI, which identifies you as a person, not as a user, and your phone number. Then you've got all the country codes, then your network codes, and location codes, as well as CI. So basically where you are in terms of location. So that's MCC is there, and C is there, and CI is there. Cool. And then of course there's an eye and the eye as well. So within that traffic, it also shows you what device you have, right? So you're running an Apple device or whatever. So now you've got, so these are all information that's available when you go and hack a GRX router, which is pretty cool. Now, with those four information, you can plug into a location API. And so if you plug in the MCC, MNC, and cell ID information, you're gonna get this sort of location stuff. It's going to give you GPS coordinates and address, but obviously that is the tower that you're closest to, right? So each tower has a certain radius, so it's not going to be like here, but around an area, which is still cool because you kind of know where they are, right? GPS coordinates. And the IMEI, as I was saying, if you plug it into this sort of website, it tells you exactly what the model and make of that device is. All right. So if you have that information, you know where your target person of interest is,
know what handset they have, and you know where they are, and you can see the stuff there they're browsing. So that's pretty good information to have. Now, so we start thinking, okay, how easy is it to get to this GRS network? So in theory, the telcos have roaming agreements with different telcos. So you have on Telstra and this BT on the roaming agreement, so that my users can go to, the BT network and roam back to me. And then you can also they can also charge me for their usage, right? So in theory, the GRX network should be restricted to the telco operators with that roaming agreement and nothing else, right? But then we've got, how easy is it to get to this network? And what does it look like? So we did a bit of threat sort of landscape, just scanning, a bit of light scanning, a bit of background, just to see what else out there. So first of all, so there were reconnaissance. And all I did was multiple port scans, SIN scans, and banner grubbing. The GRX routing table has about nearly 5,000 subnets. This was a little longer. So it's around 5,000 subnet range. And that's sort of 300,000 to 400,000 IP address space in total. So that's how big it is. So, and the tool I used was MassScan. Has anyone used MassScan? Cool, a few people. So unlike Nmap, which is synchronous, MassScan is async. So it'll send off all this stuff. So if you say you're going to do a SYN scan for port 80 across this class B network, it'll just send out as fast as possible all these SYN packets, and then just wait 10 seconds for what comes back. And then, so your scan will finish, but obviously you may lose packets if depending on the type of scan and what the network's like, but it's fast, right? So it's pretty cool. So yeah, have a play with it if you want to. So MassScan, yeah, that's the kind of command line I used across. And we found that there was about 40,000 live hosts, like actually responding to pings and other open ports running some sort of services. So that's cool. So the first thing we want to do is to look for GGSN. So because if I can find GGSNs, that's where my PDP context with RAID is. That's how I can talk to these. To these GGSN. So that's interesting. As I said, the control plane is on UDP 2152 and 2123, and 2152 is the data plane. There's a GTP echo request and like a ping, and that's kind of what it looks like. So basically, you put that that echo request in a packet, and that's a response. And used another tool called Zmap. So MassScan is for a whole bunch of normal ports like 25, 21, 80s, also talking about FTP, Telnet, web ports. But then I use Zmap as well for this particular scan. Does anyone use Zmap as well? Yeah, all right. So again, it's an async scanner, and it also lets you put in a probe payload. So in this case, I attach the GTP echo packet, and so as a probe argument, and then you can specify a whole subnet, and then away you go. Right? So if you have a big pipe, you can also say bandwidth, 1 gigabit, for example, in my case. So, right, so you get a response and you find all these, so we found all these GGSNs listening. So that's cool, but to verify that they're talking, you need to actually initiate PDP context. How to talk to them, say hello, and try and create that context. So one tool you can use that's actually open source is called OpenGGSN, and within that, there's a tool called SGSN Emulator. So all software, and you just run it on your machine, and if you're in the right network, you can then specify a whole bunch of commands
So that's the GDSN listening. So it's a live GDSN out there that you can talk to. So that's how, what we did to verify that these GDSNs are actually valid, right? So it's ready to talk. So that's great. The other thing is, the other important service is DNS, right? So because when you're rhyming, it doesn't DNS look up. So we thought, okay, we started to look at the threat landscape. Okay, so in a GRX network, you're supposed to have GDSS listening, and you're supposed to have DNS service listening. So we did a quick banner grab of the DNS service. Okay, sorry, I just missed this one. So this is the typical query. So if you query a GRX DNS server with the right APN, the response will be listen GDSNs, right? For in this case, for APN, but you know, it'll be the same for the other telco. So these are the endpoints. So that's what the DNS results look like. Right. So I enumerated the banners from the DNS servers. So a common sort of command to do that, and we found a bunch of binds in Microsoft DNS, and some outdated versions. So that this had some DOS, this had some bug workflows, and so I thought, okay, so it looks like some telcos out there running DNS servers that are not patched. Okay, so vulnerable. So that's interesting in itself. Okay, so apart from GTP and DNS traffic, what else could be listening there? So in theory, nothing else should be, but we had a quick scan anyway just to see what that looks like, what other services could be running. So 25, like you can see, there's some pretty old email service here. There's a root exploit on that old XSIM remote code on the sendmail. Pretty old, 10 years old. Remote code on that, sendmail, buffer overflow on this sendmail. Okay, so that's not good. We looked at some FTP servers. There's a whole bunch here. You'll recognize some, obviously. Again, remote code on that, DOS on that, VXWorks, DOS on that, overflow on that from 2001. Pretty shocking. WFTD. And this is all banner based. So no exploitation, just banner based. But yeah, you get the idea. So we looked at web servers, a whole bunch of Apache, IS5 as well, yeah, Oracle, and again, all vulnerabilities, remote codecs, remote code on the Red Hat one, remote exec on the IS, code exec on that Oracle Apache 1322, which is pretty old. And those servers shouldn't even be there, right? So clearly people are putting things on the GRX network that are running all sorts of services and not filtering, not hardening. And you think your old exploits aren't going to work anymore? They're still good. So keep them. Right, Telnet, another popular one. So we got Alcatel, we got DOS on Windows 2000, we got XP. Pretty bad. Yeah, this Telnet D, anyone remember this? And on Solaris 8, you can do Telnet login bypass with a minus F. Yeah, so it's still there. Yeah, so SMB was good. I thought, okay, you know, that's on an internal pen test, you see SMB and see what you can do, right? So this is now on the GRX. Null session, so for those who don't know, so null session is a way to create extract session with SMB without authentication, so no password. So it's just information, those sort of commands. And we see Samba 363, Windows 2000, Windows 2003, and of course, there's vulnerabilities or anything about execution. And we're really seeing that people are mixing, they seem to be just installing the Office network on the GRX network. Yeah, so bad. So this was interesting. So there's a tool called Linum in the olden days. Now there's also a Linux port of it, and this is what you can get if you do do a null session and extract some SMB information. So history, partial policies, the shares, and all that sort of stuff. And so, you know, when you're testing, you can, once you see your shares, you can connect to it, and if it's got no permission, then you've got access to that information. So, yeah, so it's pretty much out there. Now, SNMP is also an interesting one, right? So, with a private stream, you can actually write things normally. So, with a public stream, it's only really read-only. So, a quick look. What else can we? What's there? A lot. Like, there's all these Cisco routers, every kind of routers out there. And it just goes on, different versions with public and then private stream vulnerabilities. Private and public, they're responsive both. So we're talking about SanOS, we've got Tangberg, so here we go, we've got Windows machines, Huawei routers, we've got Snetra OS 5, so pretty old, ZTE, yeah, Cytel, modem. So it looks like what you'd find in an internal context, right? Like internal network that's old, but it's out there. This is from 2014. I'll show you some updates in a minute. So in this survey, out of the 40,000 devices, whatever, there's these sort of numbers of Telnet, Open, HTTP, and more importantly, the GTP server as well. A few. So as I was saying before, the GRX is supposed to be enclosed and private between the telcos, but you can actually reach all this from the internet. So what we're finding is that the telcos that are affected are actually redistributing their BGP route onto the internet instead of just through the GRX network, which means that from the internet you can actually get to all these systems. There are about over 15 operators with GTP ports exposed on the internet at the time of research. And so really, if you can potentially exploit a box and the GRX network, get a foothold there, then you can start scanning the rest of the GRX network and then find other vulnerabilities. And it looks like people are doing bad practices anyway. So it's this seems like a fairly easy way to get into GRX network without being part of it. So that was interesting. Quick conclusion: traffic is definitely interesting. Lots of good information: where you are, who you are, what you're doing. It's not a closed off network as it's supposed to be. There's a lot of operators injecting routes into the internet, which means we can get to it from anywhere. There's a lot of hosts that's accessible, and a lot of misconfigured old services, unpatched services out there. Filtering is definitely not really happening, because in theory you should be just accepting certain traffic from certain roaming partners, and definitely need more security testing and awareness in how you implement your networks. Right, best practices quickly, obviously update, patch, harden, all that sort of stuff. Right, now with BGP, which is a border gateway protocol, which is how routes are distributed on the internet, you really want to remove your GRX prefixes from the internet facing routers, right? So you don't want to distribute that out. Use authentication between who you trust to exchange routes, which is good. And accept only routes from roaming partners that you have agreement with, so no one else can attach to you. And basic filtering. So in theory, you really only want to accept GTP versions, GTP protocols into your GGSNs, and not FTP or 80 or whatever else. DNS traffic, obviously, so DNS servers, and you want to block everything else. You know, this is our normal best practice of security, but we're clearly lacking. And you can also, most of the firewall vendors will do GCP specific firewalls, GCP aware firewalls, like Fortinet, Checkpoint, Cisco, they all do that sort of stuff. So you can start filtering on protocol specific commands, for example. All right, so since the initial research, so we talked to GSMA and said, hey, look, there's all these people exposing their GRX on the network. So they said, okay, we will look into it. We also contacted a lot of operators, so basically just did who owned the subnets and talked to the security team, said, hey, you know, you're exposing all this stuff on the internet, not good. Yeah, some ignored us, some responded, said, hey, thanks, how can we do this? So we help them to harden things up, which is good. We also did, started doing fuzzing and GCP service exploitation stuff, testing telco firewalls, developing some modules in Metasploit to augment all this old scanning, so makes it easier to look for GCP endpoints. The other thing is the IR77, which actually came out in 2007. Anyone, so you telco guys, would know about it? So it's the security guideline from USMA, which is the government body, on how to harden. It's a security guideline, basically, for the GRX network. Okay, so I re-scanned some stuff this month in preparation for this talk. So the good news is, since our conversation, it's just been quite a decrease in number of, for example, SMTP out there, it's less HTTP, less FTP. So there's quite a few protocols that are minuses, which is good. That means they're not exposing it. But GTP seems to have gone up. So there's still a lot of people doing this. So the environment's still pretty exposed out there. In terms of distribution, we didn't find any in Australia, but both in Africa, Middle East, Asia, South America. And some in Eastern Europe is one operator there. So it's that kind of stuff. But really, looking at what we found, you can jump on the GRX in one of, for example, the African telco, and then you're in the GRX. Then you go to a public.
Is that on purpose?
Sorry?
Is that maybe on purpose, that it's mainly in those countries?
I'm not going to go into conspiracy theory, but I think it's just maturity in IT. So if you're a mobile network provider out there, you're starting up and you subscribe to a GRX provider, and you've got one network, and you just go, here, you just plug everything on. Your office network, your routers, your GSMs, you're not segmenting, you're not doing VLANs, you're not doing all the security stuff. I think it's just maturity and security, and that's how it is. Because some of the guys we spoke to were very open and very happy with advice and help with hardening guides and what they should be filtering and all that sort of stuff. So it really came across that they didn't have time or much much knowledge and security. They've been told to deploy this, get this out there. We need people using it, as always, right? So we from a security perspective, things start working, then security bugs are found. Right, just a quick one on the IR77. It was published with to protect those three things. but really, well, from the pro side, there are binding security requirements. There's a whole lot. If you look at it, and you can download this, these are all the binding things you should do. You should filter, you should harden, all this sort of stuff. And it gives you some best practices, but still very high level. There's no testing recommendations or guidelines, right? Or monitoring. And worst of all, there's no enforcing. So if they said, this is a guide, but then if you don't do it, it doesn't matter. No one's enforcing to make the GRX secure. So there's a guideline. So it's better, but not quite good enough.
but some resources, this talk will be available anyway. So, oh, that was it, actually. Sorry. So, yeah, so that was it. Thank you.
Does anyone have questions for Steve?
Did they notice you were scanning?
No, I was only scanning, no, the answer is no, because I was doing some 7 or 8 ports and it sends it out and then it's the port, the IP address are randomized and then it waits for 10 seconds. So it's a very low level scan, it's totally quiet. And because I wasn't doing high volume or persistent, no one said anything. Although I was using it as Azure, and so maybe they didn't know what it was.
G'day. Have you seen any evidence of exploitation? I don't like somebody actually taking advantage of service. Or is it still pretty isolated?
Yeah, look, because it was a very much a banner level bribing information scan, we didn't get into it, so it seems like it would be easy enough to exploit, but we didn't see it.
Yeah. Good talk, by the way. So you're determining open IP is a generic based on the UDB. And then all of these other ports are open from there. Can it also be assumed that there's multiple devices behind one IP address being mapped?
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
It's publishing that, but it's also got multiple devices behind it.
Yeah, could be. They're also IP addresses with GTP ports open, but also other ports open. So it looks like the devices behind some sort of filtering or NAT, but also hosting a whole bunch of stuff. So hard to definitively say at that level, but yeah, it could be it.
Since GDB Prime is used for billing, if I'm using UDP, if I can get the system to drop that so it never sends it across, will I get my phone calls or services for free?
Well, if you're sitting in the middle, in theory, if you're going to tamper the traffic, then you're going to guess the endpoint, right? The top endpoints are unique addresses and they're randomly generated. So we're looking at how you can predict that, so you can actually intercept, hijack the traffic. So in theory you can, but then sooner or later your telco will do billing verification and they'll probably see it. But yeah, it's not the next step, yeah.
Can you just clarify, is there a successor to this GRX network? Because it's obviously totally closed, and if there isn't, then there's not anyone.
Is there a successor
to this?
So GRX is for 2G, 3G, and then the successor is really the IPX network, IP exchange, and that was designed to carry multimedia, high volume, and other and more. So because GRX was seen to be the first generation, the IPX is really the next generation, which will carry all sorts of traffic. And yet the IR77 and the other security guidelines is unsecured. So yeah, that's the next place to have a look at the IPX network. So obviously, to get the routing table, you need to have access to a telco router.